Good afternoon. Maybe we'll start out with having you tell me what you know about Apollo 13. Yeah. Where did this phrase, "Houston, we have a problem," come from? Apollo 13. Does anybody remember any other details about that particular flight? Haven't read the book recently? Yeah. There is a book about it. I read it. Actually, I happened, before I knew I was going to have this, I read a book. It's called Lost Moon, the older version. And I came across just recently at my in-law's place, they have a book. I think it was just called Apollo 13. And I think it's the newer book, actually. But this phrase, "Houston, we have a problem," actually is not a direct quote from that. The actual quote is, "Okay, Houston, we've had a problem here." The phrase itself actually comes from the movie. So if you ever think you haven't been influenced by movies, there you go. So the date was April 11, 1970, and they were headed, this was the third time that the United States was going to the moon, sending a man to the moon. And they were around 200,000 miles away from Earth, approximately 56 hours into the flight. And that's when John Swigert said, "Okay, Houston, we've had a problem here." And I think there was a bang. And I'm not going to go into all the details. You can read the book. It is an interesting book, the one that I read. I would recommend it. I thought it was well written. It's written by Jim Lovell, I think, and maybe one of the other ones. So I would like to divide this talk into three parts. And I should have given you handouts to start out. So if you can just hold off on looking at the flip side of this page until we get there, that would be nice. We'll try to have a little discussion at the end. The front, I hope you can figure out which is the front. Okay. You can look at it if you want. So my theory is this afternoon, of course, and I think it makes sense, is the more familiar you are with something, the better you're going to be able to solve a problem. And we're going to talk about problems, and I'm not sure if you should have a 30-some-year-old talking about his old problems. But anyway, if you were, let's say you were driving a truck, and I was riding with you, and you suddenly heard a noise, and you would say, "Lauren, what's that problem?" I would say, "I don't know. I have no idea." But if it was something that I was more familiar with, I might be able to give you some ideas. And so I think the question we have is, when we as school board members come up against a problem, are we familiar enough with the curriculum, with the students, with the teachers, and with how school works to actually do any solving? We talked about this maybe a little bit. Paul maybe talked about that a little bit. But how do we actually solve problems? So I divided it into three parts. First of all, some thinking problems that we have. And this is not just to do with school. It applies to all areas of life. Secondly, then, is some positive things, which I think I'll just be repeating what's probably already been heard from what I'm hearing. I haven't heard Ivan Martin's communication skills. Sounds like I should, maybe. But we'll talk a little bit about communication. I think Paul talked about that, and love and respect and prayer. And then I would like at the end, if we have time, we'll try to discuss. And if you have any particular issues you want to bring to the group here, you're welcome to do that. But I also have some scenarios in the back. Some of them I think are somewhat real that we can discuss as a school board. So I would like to look at these thinking problems kind of one by one. They are on your paper. And there's something that I think, again, anybody can face. It's not just a school board. It's good for all of life. And they're also known as logical fallacies. I don't know if you've gotten into logical fallacies. They're kind of fun. You have to use them carefully. You don't want to start throwing out everybody's ideas, but they're kind of fun. I enjoy them, so that's part of the reason they're here. To quote from one of my sources, and if you would like a master list, there was someone from, I think it's some university in Texas, that put together kind of a master list of logical fallacies. I find it, if you want it, I can give you a PDF of it or something, or a link. But he says this: fallacies are fake or deceptive arguments, arguments that prove nothing. Fallacies often seem superficially sound and far too often have immense persuasive power even after being clearly exposed as false. Fallacies are not always deliberate, but a good scholar's purpose is always to identify and unmask fallacies and arguments. So the first one that I have here is simply called poisoning the well. And the idea of this one is kind of a personal attack idea. It's a fallacy that, and I'm going to be using for some of my notes, using some of what he said on that paper, so I'm plagiarizing just a bit, but I will give credit to him as well to try to relieve my guilt. But it's the fallacy of attempting to refute an argument by attacking the opposition's character. So it's a little bit like, to give an example, the parent says that the teacher isn't doing a good job. Okay, so you're on the school board, the parent says, well, the teacher is not doing a good job, they're doing this, this, and this. And we won't listen to the parent because that parent always complains about things. Now, is that a safe argument? I will not listen to you because you're a complainer. Well, in a sense, it is, but by itself, it really isn't. Because often complainers do have some truth to say. Student, here's another way it can happen with a teacher. Student A says, student B did something wrong. But the teacher won't believe student A because student A is the naughty student. Have you ever had that happen? Where you almost can take sides that the naughty student always gets the bad rap because they're the naughty student. And so if the naughty student says something about the usually good student, it can't be true, right? It's a fallacy. It's not, I mean, again, we can consider those things, but we need to be careful that those aren't used to prove guilt. Secondly is guilt by association. This one is maybe somewhat similar, but it has the idea that, well, don't listen to her, she's a Republican, or don't listen to him, he comes from that family. And again, it's not that we can't, as boards, consider what family the students come from, but to use that to make a disciplinary decision, for example, is not safe when there is a problem. Well, they come from that family, so they automatically get put in this box, and so therefore, here's our decision. Guilt by association. Don't listen to them. They're a certain religion or race or whatever. Again, I'm not saying that we should not consider our sources. I think we should. I think I might have my two mixed up here, but let's go to the argument from silence. This idea is similar to an argument of ignorance, so it could happen that when my source, when the person that I'm suspecting is silent. And this could happen. What are some reasons that our source could be silent? One is, we haven't asked them. But we assume because the teacher just doesn't talk, maybe it's usually the student, but let's say the teacher, you say, well, the teacher just doesn't say much, so obviously the teacher was at fault in a given situation. Or the student refuses to speak, therefore that student is guilty. Well, it's natural for us to conclude that if a student is, you know, we think they're trying to hide something, but maybe we haven't given them an opportunity. So argument from silence. They're silent, so therefore they're guilty. It's not safe. It's a thinking problem. Appeal to tradition, and I think I missed this on yours, but this has the idea as of, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And in a sense, it is true that that is sometimes the case, but it's a little bit like, well, I can read just fine, and we didn't have a school library when I grew up, and look at me, I can read. Well, it's a nice idea, but really that doesn't prove anything. It doesn't prove that a school library is not okay, just because you can, or I can read. The other fallacy that's kind of, or thinking problem that can sometimes happen is also an appeal to the new. Maybe that's a problem with us younger ones sometimes, is, well, it's new, so it must be better. That again, maybe can be considered, but is not a safe guide in and of itself. Along with this appeal to tradition is an argument from inertia. Maybe you could say stay the course. This is a little different, and I think I've experienced this, I don't know about school in particular, but you get so far, it's the idea of, okay, I've spent $200 fixing this problem in my house, and I just hate to see that go to waste and change my mind and try something else, because I've already spent $200. So it's a little bit like a school board saying, okay, here, teacher, here's, you know, we sit down for 2 hours, we figure out what the teacher's going to do to solve the problem. The teacher implements the solution that the school board gives, and it doesn't work. But we as a school board say, well, you just need to keep trying. You just need to keep doing it, because we thought of this, you know, we spent a lot of time. It's like, we've invested so much, we hate to lose it, right? Instead of just changing our minds and saying, you know what, that didn't work, actually. And I'm not saying I've seen that happen in school necessarily, but I think it is a problem of thinking. Just we're human, and we tend to make those kinds of mistakes. Something to watch out for. The 6-inch versus 8-inch wall that we heard about in the other class. That idea of, you know, we spent so much time putting that 6-inch wall up. Who feels like tearing it down and doing it right? But finally, you got to do it. Don't let that stop you in a school board where you've invested so much and now you have to tear it down and do something better. All right. The complex question. This is the fallacy or the problem. And I find this happening probably when you get into heated discussions on a personal level. We tend to say, just answer me yes or no. Just say yes or no. Is it this way or isn't it? It's kind of like saying, why did you rob the bank? Or here's one that you could do in school sometimes. Say a student cheated. Why did you cheat on your work? Did you do it because you don't love Jesus? How are they supposed to answer that question? It's a yes or no question. Well, it's not quite that simple, is it? Did I do it because I don't love Jesus? I mean, thinking of an upper grader. How are they supposed to answer that? And I think when things get heated, we just want answers. And so we tend to just try to simplify and say, well, yes or no, was it that way or wasn't it? But often we just need to, it's not like pulling out a square, right? And saying, well, this is how it is. Unfortunately, we as human beings are just too complicated for us to figure out with just a square really fast. All right. Maybe somebody has some comments so far on any of these before we move on. Something that stands out to you. All right, the next one is the excluded middle. This is an argument that has the idea, well, if an apple a day keeps the doctor away, why not eat apples all day? There's no middle ground, all right? So if a teacher, for example, might say, well, my students are struggling in knowing their math facts, and so I found out that doing flashcards is really helpful. May I skip some recess and do more flashcards? Well, what are you going to do with that? I mean, that might be appropriate, but just because flashcards are good doesn't mean that I exclude that middle ground and say, well, I'll just do flashcards all day. Finally, if they're not getting English done, you might have other problems. All right, I like the next one. I wish I had a magic wand. This is a great one if you want to procrastinate and get out of things. Use it sometime. Well, I don't, but this is the idea of regretfully saying, well, I wish I had a magic wand. You know how that just kind of just, I can't fix it. I've just gotten rid of my responsibility. I'm not God. You know, like I can't really do much. And, you know, there is a sense, again, which that is true. We can't just fix, but we need to be careful as boards to not maybe use that as an excuse. to get out of responsibility. I wish I could do something about that student that gets angry in class and disrupts, you know, but I don't have a magic wand. I'm not God. I can't fix it. Shrug. So are we avoiding responsibility by appealing to our lack of miracle-working capabilities? I think that's the question. All right. Overgeneralization or hasty generalization. It's pretty easy to understand. My child didn't do well on the Barton program. This proves that no students will do well on the program. It is just junk. Or my student, you know, I heard about a man over in North Carolina that this is what happened, and I tell you what, that curriculum or that, you know, that songbook or whatever it is, it's just junk. It's a generalization based on one or two instances. And it's just, I guess, inappropriate logic. At the same time, again, I think there's balances to all these, and that is we do, as humans, need to make reasoning choices based on our observations, and we don't have all the data. So, you know, if we heard a story about how somebody used a certain special ed program and it didn't work, we do have to listen to that, too. So I'm not sure where that line is. But let's be careful that we don't judge everybody based on that, based on what we heard from one person one time in 1975. Another one of my favorites is the next one, is the paralysis of analysis, and I like it partly because it rhymes, I think. But it's kind of neat in that it explains probably some of what I've seen, maybe again, not necessarily in school board, but just in general, let's put it that way. But it's the idea, since no data is all in, then I can't make any decision until I have all the data, and therefore I can't make any decision until I learn more, and I never get all that I need to have, and so I never really can make the decision. So it's used to justify procrastination. Well, I haven't talked to that person yet, you know, I just don't know what to do. We'll go talk to them, maybe. But the idea that we become paralyzed because we don't have all the information. So maybe this is kind of a balance to the idea of overgeneralization. At the same time, let's not generalize too fast, but at the opposite end, let's not get paralyzed because I just don't know everything. We have to finally just get up and do something, too. All right. Another one that is not on your paper is the slippery slope. And one person told his son that you need to have this book on logical fallacies. And I asked this person, I said, which one do you hear the most of? And maybe I was talking about a minister's meeting or something. He said, slippery slope. And I want to be careful with this one because I think the slippery slope, personally, I think it's true. There are slippery slopes. But one of the to dig into this just a little bit is we need to be careful about saying that one thing inevitably leads to another. So that inevitably, I think, is the key. So if you two, this is not my illustration, but I think I'll share it. If you two go and drink coffee together, one thing will lead to another, and soon enough you'll have children, and then you'll be on welfare. Well, okay, maybe. But do you know that? If we allow our students to work outside, they'll want to do it every day. And we just don't want to have them do it every day, so we're just not going to let them work outside at all. Because we'd hate for them to just slide down the slippery slope and just... We won't allow you as teachers to give your students extra recess, because then all the teachers are going to want to ask for extra recess, and we can't have that. Well, do you know that? And maybe there's probably a lot better examples you could think of, but it's the idea of making assumptions that something inevitably will lead to the next, when really we don't know that. But again, there's a balance to that. Any discussion before we move on to a few keys to think about?
One thing I like that you mentioned about assuming that being a child is off the money, that, you know, if he gets blamed for something, it's always going to be true. We do need to be careful in that, because there have been a lot of those that have been blamed. Mm-hmm. It wasn't them, and it really wounded them, and it was, you know, it kind of affected them a long time of their life. It affects them down the road. I really appreciated what an older man shared with me one time from another congregation. He's not living anymore. He said, when they were working in the school board of that church, they had a situation that came up in school. And he said, they had some boys there that had problems. And he didn't say what the situation was, but he said it's pretty bad and somebody needed to be disciplined. But nobody would own up to it. And they couldn't get any grounds. But we were talking with the boys. You know, and finally they were like, well, should we spank some of these boys that were always a problem? Should we just leave it? So they decided, well, they're going to leave it. They had a talk with the boys and share it with them. And he said, you know, it was some time before they heard anything. It might have been a couple of years. And one of them schoolboys gave a talk to the Lord. And that was always a well-behaved child. They would have never thought that he would have done this. He came and confessed. And he said, oh, we ever so thankful we didn't just go ahead and spank this boy.
Yeah.
We thought that probably would have happened. You know, and seeing those things, you know, sometimes those that do have struggles and do a lot of things, if they do get blamed unjustly, it seems real hard for them to just be able to just lay that down and let it go on. Mm-hmm.
Thank you for bringing that out. Yep.
I really appreciate this list that you went across as thinking problems. Am I the only one, or I can really identify these and other people well? I'm not even sure I can identify this in my own thinking really at all. So what do we do about that?
Well, there's one I missed. And that is the blood is thicker than water. And I don't know, maybe you could identify this one, but do you ever feel defensive of your own family? You've probably, as school board, we sometimes maybe run into where a parent is defensive of their children a little bit. And I'm not a parent of a child in school, so I don't know how I will be. I hope a very nice parent. But anyway, that might be something you could identify with.
That's why there's more than one person on the board. You help identify each other's boundaries.
Yeah, if you get on the board with him, he could probably help you out with that. One of the things that I think of as well, maybe along with what you said, Jonathan, was how much does pride work into some of these? And especially maybe, I don't know, maybe there was one in particular I had thought of where you could almost, well, the argument from inertia maybe, just the idea of just, well, I thought up this great idea, it really should work, so just keep doing it, is that pride. Anyway, the blood is thicker than water. That one, I think it's easy to explain. It just simply means that we tend to be defensive of our close relatives. So if a parent hears that their child did something wrong, they have a hard time believing it, they become defensive of the student, or maybe they're slower to believe it. The opposite can also be true, and that's called poisoning the well. It's that first one we looked at, where we're just, they're bad because we attack them, or we can attack them, or the opposite of that then is this blood is thicker than water. They're automatically good because I'm related to them. Maybe you had some more thoughts on that, Jonathan. I didn't answer your question really. But.
Not really.
Yeah.
I think it does, you know, what Larry shared is why we need a team, but then we need to be functioning as a team.
Yeah.
And have enough freedom of communication to be able to open up and say, isn't that child couch.
Yeah, right. All right, so moving on to some more positive things. We've already heard about communication, but I would like to touch on this, not because I'm really good at it, but because I need to hear it too. But I think a few things, if there are problems, one of the keys is communication. At least that's the way it works in marriage. just being able to calmly communicate with your wife is one of the things that helps to settle things down. I think that can also happen. One of the problems, though, at least I find in my own self, is the time and the energy to do it is what we have trouble finding, I think, sometimes. The time and the energy to actually figure out, how do I get enough information to make decisions? And as I consider these thinking problems, it stands out to me that proving a point requires correct information. And to get correct information takes communication, especially when it's relationship problems, of course, or discipline problems. And I think it's easy for a board or a leadership team of any sort to sit around in a corner somewhere and they can sit on these chairs and they can discuss and say how bad this is and how you know, this person is just, he just ought not to do that, and that family's just that way, and that, and you know, it's maybe okay, but then maybe we haven't actually talked to the teacher or the parent that much, or in other situations it could be the people you're working with. And so you know it's right, maybe, but have we tried to actually understand them? And one of the keys to communication, of course, is listening to the teachers, the students, the parents, and the community as well. And part of that listening is not just listening to someone talk, but trying to think, do I have the support of the rest of the people? And sometimes we know that without asking everybody. So I guess I see that as kind of a communication, just thinking. Also, something to consider is asking what and when questions rather than why questions. This is something to consider, like I said, but try to stick with the facts. Why questions really only get you so far because we don't always know why. And I don't mean this to say that it's not important why, but more that try to understand the facts before you understand the feelings, maybe, is what I'm trying to say. Before making a judgment, I guess, is where I'm going with that. At the beginning of a problem researching, don't be too judgmental. Along with this gathering facts is that communication, and I think we heard this already, promotes good relationships and good feelings. Communication actually helps people feel good. And if you can have people feel good, they'll actually agree with you quicker. If the parent feels that they are understood, or I feel that I'm understood, but I still disagree with you, as long as I feel that you heard me, and that you listened to me, and that you understood my point, I think I'd be easier to disagree with you. And so, that's again, it's so hard to take the time to do this. But it's not just about getting facts, it's also about helping people feel good, whether we like it or not. Number two is respect and love all people. And this is a matter of learning to simply respect and humbly listen to other people's input, even if they are committing a list of fallacies. Maybe they're just big on the slippery slope, or they're big on, you know, they're from that family, so you shouldn't listen to them. Even if they do that, we can still respect those people. And they still probably have something to say. So don't use, I guess what I'm saying is, don't use this list to write people off. Because we might be doing those things ourselves. And there's a lot more to that list if you want. And I think, by the way, that many of those in the list, if you would, maybe you can't find a chapter and verse, but I think there's some biblical principles in those as well. They're not just, I mean, they're more from a secular standpoint, but there's definitely some biblical application. Respect goes a long way a long, long way in relationships, even if I don't agree with someone. Number three is prayer. And I know from experience how easy it is to forget to pray. There's a big problem, and thinking about it, it's like, why didn't I actually pray about that? And I think perhaps one of the keys to that is to simply practice. Learn to keep taking those things to God. Prayer is not procrastination, though. Well, I'll pray about it for a week. Prayer is taking on responsibility and letting God guide me in those decisions. And making, if we can only just look back and say, you know what, I did the best I knew how at that point. Even if we're sad we did what we did. All right, any more things you'd like to add to this list? I only have three keys to use when there are problems: communication, love and respect, and prayer. Maybe there's something that's burning a hole in number four for you. All right, you can bring those up later if you want. Let's move on. So just to recap a little bit, we have some thinking problems to avoid. When the teacher says, Houston, we've had a problem here. In the case of Apollo 13, that was the start of their communication. And that was the start of their work. It wasn't, Houston, we've had a problem, they fixed it, and then they went back to bed or something like that. But there was a tremendous amount of effort that went into getting those men. There were three men. And getting them flung around the moon on a free return trajectory back to Earth. Tremendous amount of work. Communication took a lot of time, a lot of stress in that case. Immediately they began looking at the indicators. People tried to figure things out. What's going on? They didn't know what happened, actually. I don't think they really knew it until probably later, even after they were back on Earth. But they could see the symptoms. They could figure out, okay, what's our path forward? All right, let's look at some scenarios. I'd like your discussion on these. We have about 15 minutes, I think, to kind of just be a school board, I guess. And if you have some things to add to this as we go along, this is your time as well. I don't have to do a lot of talking. But scenario one is that we're going to start out with a really simple scenario. So a teacher comes to you with the following information. Jane is not learning. Jane is disruptive and is mean to other students. This is what you're told before the school board meeting. You as a school board are sitting down without the teachers before the teachers come into the meeting, and you're going to discuss this quick. What are you going to say as the chair? Let's say you're the chairman. What are you going to do with this situation? Jane comes to you with the following information, or teacher comes to you. Jane is not learning. Jane is disruptive and mean to other students. What are you going to do?
Well, it kind of seems like there's two separate problems here.
Okay.
Not learning is one thing. Being disruptive, being mean to other students is another issue. But one of the first things I would ask the teacher, have you communicated with my parents? Do they know about this? Are you working with this together?
Okay. All right, so the suggestion is from this chairman, let's say, is that he's suggesting we're gonna ask the teacher, have you been communicating with the parents? All right, what is either another approach or another thing that we might want to communicate with the teacher or with the situation?
One thing that the student is actually understanding the information or the instructions or the lesson, mm-hmm. and by without learning or without really knowing it, kind of like that, I don't know where we're going. Mm-hmm.
So I think, go ahead.
That's one another thought.
I think maybe one of the things to add to that is that we as a school board have very little information with scenario number one. What is the teacher's definition of not learning, for example? Maybe the teacher has some ideas on why they're not learning. Maybe we as a school board need to sit in the class and find out the teacher's not teaching. What does she mean or he mean by disruptive? What does the teacher mean that he's disruptive? Like, what does that mean? Can we, the school board, sit down and say, well, here's your solution? Not yet, right? So we need to communicate with the teacher and the parents. Sounds like the parents might need to be involved, teacher to parent. Anything else to get more information that we might need to consider?
Find out what else is going on in the student's life.
Okay.
I have a student who had braces, and every time they tightened them, he was aware.
Mm-hmm.
He was miserable all day and all night, for at least the first week.
Was he able to verbalize that?
No, it all came out of meanness to the other.
Is that right? Yep.
Mm-hmm. Took a while for me to understand.
Yeah. That's an excellent point.
Would the board sit around and discuss that without getting more information from the teacher?
Well, I'm not sure they should.
There's very little communication
right
here for the board to sit together and talk and discuss it.
I think
I would
that's
want
right
the teacher there and explain,
yeah,
you know, so we can ask questions and
okay
communicate in a situation like this.
Exactly. So I think the point is, let's not sit around this table and figure this out before we talk to the teacher and get some groundwork and figure out what is the teacher actually saying. All right, let's go to scenario number two. Well, let me see. Yes. Scenario number two, a teacher says that James is not doing so well in school and is misbehaving some of the time. The parent comes to you and says they think the teacher is not handling things properly. Another teacher, though, is having respect issues with James's older brother, Howard. So you're sitting with the teachers in a school board meeting. Again, parents, right? Are the parents involved? And I know how hard, as a teacher, it is hard to talk to the parents, but I've also found they actually understand their children pretty well, right? We as parents kind of know their weak spots. And so if we can get the parents on board. But one thing I will say about both scenario one and scenario two is one of the problems that we need to be careful to avoid is Jane comes from a bad family. Okay? James comes from a bad family, so therefore we can't really do anything about it. Or maybe not consider that somebody else could be misbehaving along with James from a different family. Could be some of the cause even. Somebody have some thoughts on scenario two, how you might approach that from a school board perspective, maybe in addition to what we've already talked about.
I still think there's a validity problem, the same as number one, from both sides, both the parent and the teacher. There has to be some substance. This really doesn't, it qualifies as an accusation,
mm-hmm,
but it doesn't really carry any freight yet. And so we need to understand what is the concern, what are the scenarios that brought both the teacher and the parent to this notion.
Yep. How many times actually did he break the broom in front of the whole class or whatever? Yeah. Some actual instances and facts besides just some accusations.
I think another thing that comes up here is that I think it's the board's job sometimes to explain to parents that you don't necessarily have to agree with what was done. It says the teacher not handling things properly. Yeah, that's unfortunately kind of a common complaint from parents, but can we at least agree that something needed to be done?
Mm-hmm.
Oftentimes there is, but the common ground is we do oftentimes say, well, yeah, okay, something needed to be done. But then let's not get too excited about the method of which something was actually done. There are, after all, you know, 100 ways to skin a cat.
I don't know if parents have talked to the teacher or not, but you know, there's a saying that the teacher and the parents should have an agreement that if the teacher, if the parent won't believe everything the students say about what goes on in school, if the teacher doesn't believe that everything the students say about what goes on,
right, yeah.
I'm going to switch around. Well, the students say at school, and the teacher won't believe everything that the students say out in their home.
Mm-hmm. Scenario number four. The teacher has schedule conflicts. Parent-teacher meeting on Friday night, conflicts with volleyball game. Christmas vacation, conflicts with family gathering. School start date, conflicts with the trip he already had planned. School program date, conflicts with the siblings' school program. School picnic date, conflicts with the summer trip he was going to start right after school ends. This came from somebody else. I did not make this up. Somebody else did. But that was helpful. How do you deal with scheduling issues? Give them
it depends partly if it's one or all five. Clearly an issue with that scenario.
So if it's all five of these, then maybe they could cut down a little bit on the trips. Yeah. Okay. Should we be able to provide substitutes sometimes for things like this? Should we move parent-teacher meeting for our youth volleyball game? Or maybe the youth sponsor should just think ahead a little bit. I guess that would be another option.
Maybe sometimes it seems to me that the teacher has to realize that they have a job to do too. It's part of their responsibility. There's some things you have to give up.
Scenario number five. One teacher got a note. This did not come from me either. I did change it maybe a little bit. One teacher got a note that was unsigned. This is, I think, true. That told the teacher what a scoundrel the teacher was. It was finished by saying they want to do violence to the teacher, and this happened in a conservative Mennonite school. So you, as a board, are confronted with this problem. You don't know who it was. Seems like prayer might be the first one on the list. What's next? I wish I had a magic wand.
I'm sure she's ready to die.
Yeah, I'm sure the teacher is ready to die. Yes.
I think the school would benefit by having somebody in the school, in the classroom, observing what's going on.
Besides the teacher. Mm-hmm. So maybe it's time for the school board to either appoint some, delegate somebody to physically be at school at some point, or be there themselves, you know, besides the teacher. Okay?
I like something Andy Yoder used to do. The teacher said, back in Tennessee, said that you never knew when you were going to walk in the room, kind of go again to the classroom to kind of see how things were going on. I never did that as much myself, but if there are issues and problems you're facing, I think that's a good thing.
Just show up.
Mm-hmm. Some board members want to show up and just kind of sit in or walk through the classroom.
Mm-hmm.
I walked in the schoolroom one time. And, last year, the teacher was teaching. I think I was in there 3 minutes before she knew I was there and about scared her right there. I was kind of scared of her. I just kind of slid in. Yeah, a lot of students knew I was there when she was up there teaching. And she asked me later.
I like that point, though. I think that's good. In this situation, I mean, I don't know the entire situation, but perhaps that would be one of the things is to start with showing up. And, of course, I'm sure it's more complicated than what's on this paper. Anything else?
I've been aware of a few of these kind of situations. It sounds extreme, but it actually can happen. Or a similar type of situation that, you know, something is happening but nobody takes ownership.
Mm-hmm.
But something is really happening. The lunchbox is being hidden. Who is hiding the lunchbox? to be really careful that you don't amp the whole situation up by the way it's handled.
Yeah.
I kind of think that maybe the best thing is for the teacher just lay pretty low on that one, and the board too. And maybe have the parents be very carefully instructed that they ask their students, their children, do they know who's hiding the lunchbox?
Mm-hmm.
And that's step one. Just that's all that you need to take to parents.
Mm-hmm.
Who's do you know who's behind it? Just keep the thing really low key.
So keep the heated arguments for later.
Yeah. Because somebody else needs to stand here.
Yeah.
I know the school, right. They had a situation very similar to this where they actually had the board came in, he stood there and said, everybody's going to shut their eyes and we're going to wait until somebody raises their hand.
Mm-hmm.
Well, nobody raised their hand.
Yeah.
He painted himself into a corner. And the children learned a lot that day. They outsmarted the board. The scholars won, I'm sorry.
Yeah. It's a good point. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Is that my second bell? Is that two? Okay. We better hang it up. Sorry, I should have left a little more time for discussion. This is starting to get interesting. Maybe somebody has something else to say on any of these points. I feel like we hurried over them a little bit. I'm sure there's lots to say.
Well, I assume this note is coming from the student, not from the parent, right?
Well, hopefully. No, I believe it was from the student. That would have been my impression. But. All right, something else. I think one more thing I'll say, just in closing, is in the Apollo 13 flight, one of the goals was to get them back to Earth safely. And I think that is one thing that we do need to keep in mind in all these little details that we're just, one of the things we need to keep in mind is our goal with our school. And maybe that can help, maybe not just solve every problem, but can help guide our decisions a bit with that. Thank you for your attention.